Right. So what we've been doing is talking about NLP in our lesson this month. We're going to talk a little bit about how to establish rapport. So these are based on the NLP papers that were in your download packet. And we're going to start talking about rapport in the sense of rapport is a relationship which is based on harmony, conformity, accord, and affinity. Now, some of the things that you hear tonight, you may be thinking to yourself, is this all genuine? Am I going to be learning something to interact with people and it's not really me type thing? These are proven techniques that people who study counseling and psychology learn to do. We naturally have that rapport with the people that we come in contact with that mean a lot to us. And when you're in a situation where somebody is learning to trust you and open up to you, sometimes you have to make more of an effort to be present for that person. So we're going to talk about pacing. Pacing means that we're meeting the other person where they are in their world, and we're reflecting what he or she knows to be true for them, and we are matching their verbal and nonverbal behaviors. So it's really a time when we put ourselves aside, because if you don't pace, you will subtly show the other person that you disapprove or that you are not interested in them or in their feelings or what they have to say. So it takes a little bit more effort when you're in a situation that isn't as natural as the rapport that you have with somebody like your best friend. So remember, if you want acceptance, you must give acceptance. And if you want approval, you must first give approval. And if you want someone to listen to you, then you must first listen. And it's interesting because the word pace is from the ancient Roman goddess of peace. So we're going to talk about some of the techniques for pacing. To pace one, one must mirror the other person's mood, their body language, their speech, their breathing, and beliefs and opinions. But that doesn't mean you have to agree with them. It just means that you're mirroring back to them what is coming. So in other words, think of yourself as the mirror and somebody's talking to themselves. And you're the one that they're looking at, and they're looking to see if they can actually trust you and if you're credible to help them go into the depths of what they really need to verbalize and say. So what does pacing do for the other person? It speaks the same language, that you both have the same language and that you meet on the same wavelength. And it provides a harmonious climate of acceptance. It reduces resistance and it creates that trust and credibility. So once you've established that with somebody, and especially if you're going to be using the HARP with people with special needs, that's a place where they're really, they're looking at you very carefully. And lots of times, patients in hospitals, they really want to talk with somebody, and you're going to find very often when you're by the bedside that there aren't so many people that the patients get to talk to. They hold a lot from their families and put on a strong front. The nurses and doctors are usually fairly busy, and they want to make sure they get information from them. But when it comes to emotions and feelings, they will tend to pour out to us. Now, you actually want to have somebody who's a trained psychologist or psychiatrist or social worker when things get very intense. So with that, know that there are times when you're out of your realm as far as what you'll be able to do. But you also want to be prepared so that at any point somebody does start opening up to you. And pacing works because of all the studies that have been done, it shows that 93% of communication depends on how we deliver the information and what the nonverbals are when they come back to us. And the communication shows that 55% of communicating with another person is physiological, that it talks about their posture, their gestures, the blinking of the eye, their breathing level, their energy level, and their eye movements. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And then, that's a very high percentage, 55% we get that communication of what's going on with a person physiologically. And then auditory, the tonality of their voice is 38%. What is the tone of their voice? What is the tempo? What is the rhythm and the timbre and the volume and the pitch and the pauses? Those are all very important. Being a mother, I can remember times when I was really anxious with my children and my voice would go up in pitch and it would be a lot faster if I had to do a little parenting there. I learned through the psychology and counseling program that there are ways to be more effective in communication when it comes to relating with our voice. And only 7% is given to the words that we actually use in communication. What predicates do we use? What keywords do we use? What are the common experiences and associations when we're communicating with one another? So we're going to jump into the NLP work and just review a little bit of it. We have eye movements where if you're looking upward, you're coming from a visual point of view. And so if you look to your left, those are images that you remember from the past. And if you look to the right, then those are where you're constructing those images. Now, this pertains to people who are right-handed, and left-handed it would be reversed. And it's a little bit interesting because often people who are right-handed, there will be very few right-handers who are wired like left-handers. But if you're left-handed, there are a lot more that are wired like right-handed people. So that's interesting to take into consideration. So when you're doing some of these exercises with your family and with your friends and ask their permission to, don't tell them that you're looking at their eyes. And just ask them the questions. I believe that's in our NLP packet on number 15. You could take that and ask those questions to a friend this week and really get a good look at where their eye movements are going. If they're looking laterally to the side, either left or right, that's an auditory way of communicating. And looking to the right would be constructing, and looking to the left would be something remembered. And then looking down to the right is the kinesthetic modality. And if you're looking down to the left, that's where you're having an internal dialogue with yourself. We had a very interesting experience happened at San Diego Hospice when the students were there for their internship. There was this man who was in a wheelchair and looking straight forward, and his eyes didn't move at all. And his son came from New York City, and his son was a professional singer on Broadway. And when we went into the room, we asked if he would like to have some music beer for his father. And he goes, ah, he's totally out of it. And he says, I can't get any response from him whatsoever. But, you know, whatever you want to do. So I asked him, what was his dad's favorite music? And he thought for a few minutes, and he said, he liked the music from Noel Coward. Well, that was the first one for me, because I really wasn't familiar with Noel Coward's music. But here's a tip for you in your work in the future. If you carry along with you a little tape recorder or iPod, or iPads are a little bit larger, but if you carry that along, we have a computer out at the nurse's station. And so I was able to go out, log on to Amazon, put in Noel Coward, and pulled up different clips of his music. So I set my iPod onto recording. And then we went back into the room and we played that music for this gentleman. And again, he was staring straight forward. But then all of a sudden, as the music continued on playing, he looked up, and he looked up to his left, which would be visual remembered. And then he turned his head, looked at his son, looked at him in the eyes, shook his head up and down, and then put his head back to the center and looked out the window, staring like he had been doing the whole time. And that was really, really huge. That was huge in that the son really felt like he had the recognition from his father, who, by the way, had Alzheimer's, that he really had that contact with him. And for me, it was really interesting, too, because it was the NLP looking up to the remembered position. The other day, recently, I was talking to my son on Skype. I'm here in the UK right now, so it's about 1:30 in the morning for me. So if I sound a little bit tired, you'll know why. But I was talking to my son, and he's got a new job possibility of creating product in Ayurvedic cooking, different products that will address the different doshas of people, the Pitta, Vata, and Kapha. And it was interesting to watch him the whole time because his eyes were continuously going up to the right, visually constructing what those products would be. And I thought to myself, it would be wonderful if I had a picture of what was going on there so I could show you exactly what happens with eye people's movements. So on that number 15, NLP, I'd like you to take time this week to pull somebody aside that you know and say, can I just ask you some questions as part of my homework? Don't tell them what you're doing or looking at them, but do, you know, kind of just take the questions and mark down what you're noticing after. And sometimes what you'll see is that somebody's defocusing and their eyes are just kind of searching. And then all of a sudden, they end up registering what it is that they want to do. So that's called defocusing. We have representational systems. The visual people tend to memorize by seeing pictures. They may have difficulty with verbal instructions, and they often sit or stand with their eyes up and their bodies erect, and they breathe from the top of their lungs. They often sit forward in their chairs and tend to be neat and organized, and appearances are very important to them. The representational system of the auditory, the person who has that as a motor operatus, those people tend to move their eyes from side to side laterally, and they learn by listening. They may be sensitive and easily distracted by sound. They are responsive to voice, tonality, and they memorize sequentially. They tend to breathe from the middle of the chest. And people who tend to be more kinesthetic, they're very aware of their feelings, and physical touch and movement are very important to them. And they learn by walking through something step by step. Conversation and movement may be at a lower, at a slower pace, and they tend to breathe from their stomach area. And then people who have an auditory digital internal dialogue, they have this sense of the information presented to them, and they may exhibit characteristics from any of the other representational systems. So that's a little bit of a review on that. There are words within each one of those representational systems. And I'd like to just kind of go over a few of those words right now. The person who is talking about a particular experience in visual terms, they may use words like, from my perspective, or they might say, I get the picture, or it's very clear, or very vivid. They might say brilliant, but then on the other hand, if you're in England, everybody says brilliant, so maybe they're all visual. Anyway, there are a lot of words here where, could you paint a picture for me? Or, wow, it was like a flash of thought for me. That's pretty vague. That would be another one that would be a visual representation. Or it's very hazy or foggy. An experience that may be related in auditory terms, they may use words such as, it sounds like, or I hear you, or speak to me clearly. Can you tell me, or can you talk or say? I really tuned into that. I'll give an ear to that idea. Would be nice to harmonize with that thought. Words like listen and question, those are all words that refer to the auditory system. Then the people who talk using kinesthetic words, they're the ones who have all the feeling words. I made contact with so-and-so, and I finally got a handle on it, and I toughened up, and he got really soft, and it shook me all up. I'm geared up for it. So things like that are from the kinesthetic. So what I'd like to do at this point, I'd just like to get a sense of what you think your representational system is. And what I'm going to do is, first of all, I'm going to ask you if you would like to share how shall we do this? Let's do it this way. If you would not like, if you don't want to be called upon in this conversation, just press number one on your keypad if you just want to listen and not be called upon. Okay. Great. Now, for the people who press number one, you don't need to press anything else at this point. But I'm going to ask the remaining people, if you think that you operate from a visual point of view, then I'll have you press number two. If you think you operate from mostly from auditory press number 3. And if you think that you're kinesthetic mostly, then press number 4. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to open up the mic to a couple people and have you give us a sense of why you think it is that you are visual. And let's start here with Kim Valentine. Kim, you've got the mic. Are you there, Kim?
Yes, here I am. Yes, can you hear me now?
So you've indicated that you think you're a pretty visual person. Can you tell us what brings you to that conclusion?
Yes, I'm always saying, let me paint you a picture, or could you paint me a picture? Or I'm always saying, let's look. I'm always saying perspective, let's get the perspective on this. I always like to have memorized from pictures or draw pictures to then graph things or show people things at work. So definitely visual.
Cool. And Kim, where are you calling us from today?
Seattle, Washington.
I think it's important for us to know that we have all three of them, and we should have all three of them, but one of them is usually stronger. So thanks for sharing some of your favorite words that you know that you use a lot.
Sure.
And let's ask Alex Burnett. He also says he's pretty visual. Alex, what kind of words?
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellently.
That's wonderful. I'll let you know that I've spent the past 2 weeks in the Netherlands, and I've been at Jan Jonkers. He says hello.
Yes.
And
yes.
We've set up the module for next summer for the Europeans. They're going to do what's equivalent to the online program as an attendance module, so they can do it in their language. So we'll be back at Samaya. I just wanted to let you know that information. So tell us about being visual.
Well, I've always seen things. There it is right there. I'm saying seen, huh? I've always seen things in pictures and tried to explain them from there, where I communicate naturally from a picture of what I'm trying to communicate. And I've learned enough to adapt to other people's listening styles that I'll say things in different terms or give different analogies that people will understand better. But naturally, I work more from sight than from sound or from contact or touch. I think that that's sort of my natural mode of operation.
Wonderful. So, Alex, I have a question for you. I wrote you recently about a woman in Denver, and she's blind, and she would like to do some work therapeutically and to work with the program. And I told her that we can make a lot of our materials available to her in a PDF form so that she can run it through her. And I'm wondering if you might have time to actually work with her a little bit, or what your schedule is like this year. If you maybe could meet her and almost be her eyes for her, since you work from a visual point of view.
I have always wanted to work with somebody who was blind on the harp, because it's so natural to intuitively know your instrument that way. The bummer for me when I got that note is that I have so much on my plate. I'm actually overflowing in my schedule and overlapping stuff. So I'm not quite ready to take on that position, and I've gotta say no to take care of myself.
Absolutely, I understand that. We all need to learn how to do that. So I need to learn how to do that sometimes too. Actually, I'm going to put out the thought to the people on the call tonight, and I need to keep the what we call your hands raised right now so I can ask some questions. But if anybody is thinking that they might like to try to reach out to this woman, this young woman who is blind, I'll ask you in a little bit to let me know, okay? So thank you, Alex, for sharing.
You're welcome.
Wonderful. And let's go to, let's see, how about Joe Philpott? You say you're pretty visual. What kind of words do you find yourself using?
Yeah, I think of when I read music, particularly somebody says transpose something, and so many people can do it by auditory, and I actually have to have the music in front of me that are the wrong notes, and I can actually play from the wrong notes and transpose. So I know that I've got quite a bit of a visual tendency.
Wow. And very cool. Very, very. And I think the three of you are my visual people, except for there's some that had pressed number one that weren't going to share. So there's probably more visual people in there. Let's go over to the people that consider themselves auditory. Jan Brookhart, what kind of words do you find yourself using a lot?
Definitely I hear, or it sounds like, that sounds like me. I'm a speech pathologist, so excuse me, I'm a little under the weather today too, but I'm always listening to vocal quality in people. And then, of course, I do use visual to kind of reinforce what I'm hearing, but I'm definitely an auditory person.
Uh-huh.
And you have a very pleasant voice, by the way, Tina. You really do. I listen. I point out things about people's voices to my friends, and they say to me, "How do you pick up on that? How do you hear that?" And I say, "Well, that, you know, that's my field. So I'm always listening. I can tell from someone's voice if they're a smoker, if they have some kind of pathology on their vocal cords. So I'm very attuned to that."
It's interesting. It's interesting too, Jan, to study the Chinese five elements.
Oh,
and
okay.
Study the Chinese five elements. There are different cycles in the day when certain things happen to different organs in the body, and there are certain flavors. Too much earth element will probably have too much salt in their body, and they don't have enough earth. They may not have enough salt in their body, and what comes out of that is the whole study of when you have an excess of a certain element, and it's earth element. You may be prone to depression or depressive. And it's interesting to see that the way they treat bipolar disease is with lithium, which is a salt. And you go down to different metal and the wood and the water and the fire. And the reason I brought this up is because in that system, they also talk about the voice, how sometimes you can get a very warm, low, comforting voice, which would be a wood voice. And then people are just shrilling all the time. And that's a metal voice.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes... A wobbly voice, and it kind of keeps going on. And when you think that you've got a chance to get a word in edgewise with somebody, all of a sudden there's no breaks in their voice. They just keep on going and going, and you can never get a word in edgewise. So these are all very interesting things to study. And I'm actually in the UK. I'm going to be performing with Fabian Mamon here in England. And they're having a huge fundraising effort. We're going to be doing all these different kinds of modal music for harmonizing with the harp. And they've got me in the most bizarre modal tunings that I've ever seen. But he's the one I've studied the Chinese five elements with. And I highly recommend, if this speaks to anybody, he's based now in Malibu, California. And if you really take a word that will be transforming in your life and your understanding of how kind of a medical point of view and maybe from a natural point of view, but the Chinese look at it from a whole cyclic type of view. And everything from, oh my God, the time in my life has happened right down a voice. And so I just thought in that since we talked to speak first. So thank you, Jan.
Okay, thank you.
And I think I really had a water voice then. I must be tired tonight. Greetings, by the way, to everybody from the other class that we talked to earlier today. And while I'm on the subject of sending information to everybody, I just want to let you know that Bambi Niles, who's always on the call with me, her mother passed away this morning. And if you could take a few moments maybe to go to the blog on the Harp Therapy Campus website and maybe just send a few words to her, I'm sure it will be very comforting. It's on the right-hand panel, and it says caring and well wishes. And so she's put information there. And it's very poignant when we lose a mother or a father or somebody very close and dear to us. So there is a posting there, and if you want to say your words to her, you can do it there. So let's go on right now. We have another person here who said that they are auditory. Robin Stegnick, you have the mic.
Hi. When you said auditory, I noticed you didn't give auditory digital as one of your choices, and I had to laugh when I read the description of that because it's so me, and I process things by talking to myself all the time. I walk a lot, and when I walk I have an internal dialogue going on almost constantly, and it's rare when I read these things where you're supposed to put yourself in one category or another. It's very rare that I can actually fit because I usually have parts of everything. But that one really spoke to me.
Wow. Auditory digital is when you're looking down to the left. And when your eyes kind of go down to the left, it's where you're talking to yourself. And people, that's where they have to make sense of information that's presented to them. That's the one looking down to the left. Looking down to the right is kinesthetic. And again, this is for people who are right-handed. Well, thank you for sharing that, Robin.
You're welcome.
And let's see. Let's go on now to the kinesthetic. Right now we have Darlene Walton. Tell us what kind of words, Darlene, that you might be using when you're thinking that you're kinesthetic.
Well, I tend to use a lot of action words when I'm speaking, you know, like grab and Betty and Sharp and Twinge and all of these that are listed there. So I actually think I'm a combination too, because I do talk to myself a lot. But I just do the feely kind of words when I talk usually.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
That's what I picked out immediately.
Wonderful. And let's ask the same question to Marky. Marky, what kind of words do you tend to use?
Thank you for asking. I realize that after attending Tempo Grandin's trainings and reading her work that I think in pictures. However, I am more kinesthetic. A friend of mine recently said, Marky, what would you ever do if you just sat down for a few minutes? And I answered her quickly, well, I would just be thinking of something to do. I'm just action-oriented. And words, when people say something to me, request at work, I say, you got it. It's as good as done. I'm on it. I have movement words that I use a lot.
That's great. That's wonderful. And you took a workshop with Temple Grandin, huh?
Yes. This was when I went for my behavior analyst certification and studied autism extensively.
Wow. That was an amazing movie that they did on her. Very amazing.
I agree.
So if people have not seen it, look up Temple, T-E-M-P-L-E, Grandin, G-R-A-N-D-E-N. It will give you a lot of insight to working with people with autism. And she's done remarkably well bringing a lot of attention to autism and what people can, I mean, she's just amazing, the things that she's created. And let's see, the last person here who said that they work from a kinesthetic point of view is Marion Spadone. Marion, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I am coming to you from a campground in the middle of Louisiana. So,
there.
Excuse me. The signal is a wavery a little bit. I didn't hear you.
Can I ask what took you to Louisiana?
Oh well, I went all the way to the East Coast. Then I went to Florida to visit my niece, and now I am on my way, working my way back to Taos, New Mexico, and I visited a friend in Louisiana on the way. So.
You're going to end up in Taos?
Yeah, that's where I'm going to spend the winter.
Wow. You'll probably get a good amount of snow there in Taos.
I think so. I've got a good place to stay. And I was in North Carolina, and I did the North Carolina Southeast HARP Conference, and that was really great.
Yeah, that's
and
a good...
I was going to say that I feel like my kinesthetic, if I'm understanding what that means correctly, is I speak a lot in words that, like, I'm always massaging the air with my hands, and I'm talking about how things are juicy and how things feel to me. So,
right.
I'm assuming that's kinesthetic, yeah.
Yeah. There's this wonderful book I have on my reading shelf, and it says, Live Life Juicy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So what I'm going to do right now is we're going to have a few announcements along the way. I'd like to have you do the exercise, NLP, page 15, with a friend, and to report on that when you do your final paper. And who did you do it with? And what kind of results did you find? Did they fit into the categories? And if they didn't, then try it on somebody else so that you get a sense, because this is sometimes it doesn't completely work, but most of the time it does. So if all of a sudden you've got a situation where you weren't able to read that. And then the other thing is to then start communicating with people. Once you find what mode of operatus they're coming from, to be very aware, to try to communicate on their level. And this is all about building rapport. And I think many of you probably have enjoyed Dr. McQuillan on his lectures. He's quite an amazing person. So the other thing, let's see, I'm trying to think if there's any announcements to make. I do have four, possibly five openings at this point for Iona. If anybody is interested in coming to Iona, Scotland for 1 week and teaming up maybe with other people before or after and doing some interesting things that they're doing. So we do have some openings before I start opening it up to people outside of our group. Be in touch with me on that. You can find all the information again on that right-hand panel in the blog where it says Iona information. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I'm going to be coming out very shortly with all, we were hoping to announce 7 websites, and we're going to announce 6 websites, just so I can keep sane here while I'm working with my web designer. Color My World has been going excellent. We've been going to nursing homes. We've been going to doing workshops around Europe. And in the UK, I have one this weekend and the following weekend. And people are loving it. And I've been working with my accompanist, and he's been putting down a lot of wonderful tracks on that. So those are my announcements that I have to make. So I'm going to ask if anybody else would like to talk about anything that's happening for them or they'd like to share with the group, and we'll do it that way. Actually, Alexa Lori came in after the fact here, and I'm just going to open up the mic to her because she says she's pretty visual according to this. Alexa, you have the mic.
Hi, hello. Yes, I am. Like when I'm thinking about things, I've always been really good at sort of closing my eyes and seeing either situations or, you know, how I'm going to plan things in a visual sort of way. And you know, like lots of the other people who visualize, I say things like, you know, I see, or I'm looking at this, or how does this look, that kind of thing. Although I'm not completely visual, because I'd say, yes, I hear you too. You know, if I'm trying to make somebody realize that I do understand what they're saying, you know, listening to them.
That's true. Absolutely. So, Alexa, why don't you share a little bit with what's happening with you, and then after that, people can just press number one on the keypad, and I'll call upon you if you'd like to share with your classmates. Okay, let's start with Alexa.
Do you mean sort of generally, or how, you know, concerning HARP studies?
Any questions you might have, or any things that have been standing out for you lately?
Not terribly. I think my biggest problem with right now with the HARP studies is still from last month, the transactional analysis, which I'm still struggling with a little bit. Just trying to get my head around everything enough that I can do the lesson at the practice at the end to try and analyze myself.
Yeah.
I think it's probably just going to take a little bit of time. I found the papers a little bit, I think the thing with me, I like to be able to sort of understand everything and get my head around something before I can, I can really deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'll come. I bought a book about sort of basic transaction analysis as well. I think by the time I finish reading it, I should be able to, to use it or play with it a little bit more. As far as the harp playing part, I just love doing the improvisations. I find it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, I do it every night before I go to bed and just let, just see what happens after I've played the, green sleeves or whatever. And I just get so surprised at what comes out. It's really nice and it's different every time.
Yes.
So I think that's the part about it I enjoy the most. I don't have any real questions that come to mind. I'm on the spot right now. But generally, I'm really, really enjoying this. The whole studying is like a bright spot in my life because it's new and it's different and yet I'm in healthcare, so it's very relevant even now, what I'm reading about and what we're doing.
So I
feel very, very positive about it all.
Wonderful. And can you tell everybody where you're calling from today?
Yeah, I'm calling from Newfoundland in Canada, in a place called Belle Island.
And
yes.
That they have the Breton harp or music festival.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Newfoundland, where they have the Breton music festival in the fall.
In Newfoundland is one step beyond. We're an island. The Cape Breton Music Festival is in Nova Scotia, which is on the mainland in Canada. We're a bit further east.
So I just found out last week that after they had the Southeastern Harp Festival in Asheville, North Carolina, that it's going to be the same weekend next year as the big harp therapy conference and harp festival in Ottawa, Canada, which is unfortunate that there's two happening at the same time. But right after the one in Canada in Ottawa, then the next weekend, I believe it is the Breton Music Festival, and that's the one in Nova Scotia. And it's not an easy driving distance by any means. I mean, people would probably have to fly there, but if anybody is taking an extended 2 or 3 week vacation and they want to do Ottawa and then somehow get over to Nova Scotia, it would be a really fun time of the year and a beautiful time of the year to do that. So I'm going to now call upon, let's go to Amanda Odish. Amanda, how are you?
Hi, Christina. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm a little bit tired tonight. You probably hear it in my voice. It's probably about, 2 o'clock or so here in the UK.
Oh, my gosh. I just had a quick question. You know those the 33 songs that we have to do in all the different categories? I was wondering, do we have to record? I know the ones for the modes that we record and we send into our mentors, but do we have to record all the rest of them, or how does that work exactly?
So on the 33 tunes, the three in each 11 category, you'll put your exit tape or your exit CD. It only has to be right-hand melody, and it only needs to be the most familiar part of the piece of music. And the reason for that is because you'll know which mode that piece is in. So when you have the tune, let's say Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star for children's, well, you'll know that it's in the IM mode. And so if somebody asked you for a familiar tune, you would be able to play the refrain from that and then just improvise in the Ionian mode to go with it. If somebody asked you for green sleeves, then you'd be able to improvise in the Aeolian mode. So it's the purpose of it is to have a collection of 33 tunes so that if anybody asks for something you could from that category, then you could say, oh, I don't really know that, but I do know this one. And it goes on your exit recording with six pieces that are required. And that is four from the Illuminations book. And that doesn't have to be note for note. It can be just the melody with an occasional left-hand note in there. And then you have the Clair de Lune. You can simplify that more if you want. And the Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And that's on your exit recording. Okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And let's go on to Robin Stagnett. You have a question or a comment?
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to say a couple of words more about the Cape Breton it's not really a harp festival, the Cape Breton music festival that's called Celtic Colors, if that would be of help to people.
Go ahead and
okay. So as you point out, that music festival is not long after the Ottawa Harp Festival. It's in Cape Breton, which is a bit remote, and it consists of concerts all over Cape Breton Island, which is part of Nova Scotia, and it's not. It's all kinds of Celtic music, including the music that's made locally in Nova Scotia. People come over from Ireland, Scotland, from the States. There are performers really from a good chunk of the world. And there is usually two or three harpists who come, and they often will give an hour and a half workshop on the first weekend. That festival actually extends about 10 days. So if anybody is interested, they could just contact me through the message board, and I can give more information about it. It's really fun. You'll meet people from all over the world. It's very casual and very traditional music, but very, very interesting.
Thanks for all that information, Robin, and you've been really active on the forum, which is wonderful. I love reading your posts. Just to let people know, when you go to the Harp Therapy campus where it says forums, you click on that, and then you can go down there to current students and jump in into any of those conversations. And there's usually quite a bit happening. So thank you, Brian.
You're most welcome.
You have the mic, Joe.
Hi. I assume I have the mic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You fade in and fade out, Christina. I'm so sorry. But it's other people have said, sometimes we sort of lose you. I wanted to mention that I just got back from the Dusty Strings Harp Symposium and got a chance to see Lori Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems to be doing quite well, although she was there for only one day. She still struggles, I think. And she's no longer teaching the Harp Symphony. I think Beth Coley's doing that. And I've been taking lessons from Harper Tosh and working pretty closely with Stella Benson, and we've got an open mic this Sunday. We use our church because it's got such good acoustics. So the church on the island, we have an open mic, and that's sort of what's happening here. I've been recording some of the Illumination songs and working on some other things.
That's great. Thanks for all that information.
Yeah, I thought you'd like to know what's happening in Seattle and the Northwest. Because Kim's on here, too, and she'll probably know what more is going on. So,
okay. And let's open up the mic right now to Pauline Vaughn. Hi, Pauline. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Christina? Hello? Hello? I seem to have lost you. Hello?
Well,
hello?
We'll come back to her in a few minutes. I'm not quite sure just what's happened here. We'll come back to Pauline. We have a comment or a question from Marion Spadone. Marion, you have...
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to say that going to that Southeastern Harp Conference was an incredible boost to me on all levels musically, and a great amount of confidence has come from that. And because I'm traveling so much and stopping in different places and meeting different people, I drag out my harp out of the car and bring it in, and I've been more confident to play for people. And the thing that's really exciting to me is that I was visiting, right after that conference, I was visiting a friend of mine in Georgia who was at the time attending a conference where she's been studying hypnotherapy for a long time and neurolinguistic programming and other things like that. And she told her classmates that I was visiting her playing the harp, and they invited me to come for the last class when the teacher was doing a dream induction and to play, to improvise and play. And I was really nervous, and I said to my friend, did you tell them I'm just learning? And she said, I told them that you're studying. And then she said to me, I just have one request. And I said, what's that? And she said, when you go there, don't say anything about being a beginner or that you're nervous or anything. Just sit down, just like you've been doing every night here when you're visiting me, and play. And so I did, and it was so much fun. And I played for 25 minutes just improvising with this trance induction. So I'm very excited about it. It was really juicy.
I love that. That's great. Let's go back right now to Pauline and see if she, Pauline, what I'm going to do, if you can hear me, is just keep talking and saying what you want to say, because there might be a connection between you and me. So if you hear that, just keep on talking, okay? I'm giving you the mic.
Me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I had a question about the internship at the hospice. I'm wondering if you have a date set for that yet.
And in fact, San Diego Hospice is going through some big things right now with Medicare. They're going through a Medicare audit, and Medicare has frozen all of payments for San Diego for the next 3 months. And this is pretty major. And they've closed down one half of the 24 beds. One half is closed down where they're doing this audit. So I've just written a letter to them tonight, because I got information on that, to find out, to make sure everything's going smoothly with our internships. I don't foresee there's going to be any problem, because there's no money exchanged. They get people doing interns for no money. But just so that you know, the first internship starts on January 27th, and it goes through till February 8th. And then the second internship, and I think there's two spaces, possibly three, available in that. And then we have the ESM in San Diego from May 19th to the 25th. And then the internship starts on the 26th of May, and it goes through June 7th. So those would be the dates, okay?
Okay. I might be very interested in the January-February dates. At the end of May, I'm bringing Dr. Tan up to Vancouver and Toronto, so that sort of uses up my end of May time. So, yeah, I'd be very interested in talking to you more about coming down there in January to do an internship. I also wondered what a criteria you have for establishing if I'm ready to do the internship.
I have gone through 1 through 6 of the DVD so that you feel comfortable improvising in the Ionian mode, Mixolydian, and Aeolian especially.
Okay. Well, I think I can do that.
You music repertoire each day that you come in to do the internship.
I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of your sentence.
Repertoire each day as you come in to do the internship so that you'll have new songs to be working on.
Right, okay. Okay. And now, for the internship, will we be staying up at on the mountain, or do we need to rent a hotel again?
It's probably easier to rent the hotel, but I think possibly the one in January, I could have a couple people up at the mountain for that. And then you could ride with me each day.
Right. Okay. So that would be less expensive than staying in a hotel. I lost you again.
I'm sorry. We haven't fixed the whole upstairs for the dormitory yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that going to happen in the spring.
Right.
Well, okay.
I'd be happy to sleep on the floor. I also had a really interesting musical experience I wanted to share. About 3 weeks ago, my youngest daughter got married, and I played at her wedding. I played with a string trio. I had never played with professional musicians before. I worked so hard learning the pieces. I was practicing 3 hours a day for about 3 months, and I did it. That really boosted my confidence and really blew me away. And so that was a really wonderful, wonderful experience.
Wonderful. So we accomplish something when we really work hard at it, and it's very fun playing with other people too.
Yeah, there's nothing that beats it. And I also had the experience during Pachelbel's canon of getting lost, and so I improvised. And so, you know, afterwards I was talking to the first violinist and told him that, and he looked at me with his eyes wide, and he said, "I don't know how to improvise." So I'm glad I did.
Great. Thanks for sharing that, Pauline. And let's see, I'd like to call on Barbara Evanson right now, or Evanson. I think you need to let me know again how to pronounce your last name. The mic, Barbara.
Yeah, Evanson was right. You got it on the first try. Good for you. Yes.
So do you have a question or a comment?
No, I just had a personal share, if that's all right.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy to be playing. In the middle of October, I had surgery on my left hand, and so it was I was in a cast for 3 weeks, which was frustrating. And then it was incredibly stiff when I got out of the cast. So I've been in physical therapy, and it's doing remarkably better than it was a couple of weeks ago. So I'm just happy to be playing again. I wanted to share that with people who would understand.
On our earlier call today, another person just had the new way of doing carpal tunnel surgery. And she says it's unbelievable. She says she wasn't cut up. They went in very, very small, took care of what they needed to take. She has no more pain in her hand, and she's very excited. So the two of you, congratulations on getting your hands back.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Before I forget, let's go to Cynthia Pratenga. Cynthia, you have the mic.
I have to respond because I am so I'm just listening to these people. I have had my arm broken in July. It was immobilized for 3 months and then restricted in movement for a month. Just yesterday, I got the go-ahead to do physical therapy.
Wow.
So I broke my arm right before I started the program, and it has been so frustrating. And when I was at the Southeastern HARP conference in Asheville a few weeks ago, I met Kathy Kirby, and
yeah.
She program from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Right.
And she broke her arm halfway through the program. And now I hear somebody else who's got something with their arm, and I have been so frustrated because right when I started, and I felt like I was a beginner anyway because I've only played the harp for two years, and that seems really short. And then I hurt my arm. So that was really neat. And I met this lady from Fairbanks, Alaska, and she got it. And she also had a link with me. My husband is in hospice, and I deal with that every day. And when she broke her arm, she was dealing with a person in her family that was dying, was in hospice. And this has been amazing to share this journey with people. And actually, I met Marion, who was on the mic earlier. She sat next to me in the modes, the little modes workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And I met her on her journey through camping and going across the United States. So that's been really neat. But I have the go-ahead to work with my arm. And I also have a really neat experience that I have a friend, and I'm a family doctor, and she's my friend and also my patient, who is an Alexander Technique therapist.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
He is working with me on my arm, and Rachel Christensen has been very, very helpful, just encouraging me as I entered my alien mode. So I feel really good about it. I was very discouraged a month ago because my arm was so extremely weak. But between working on Alexander Technique and having a friend who's helping me with that, and my wonderful teacher, Martha Painter, who is also a student going through this with me, and then listening to this, this is awesome. I feel like I can recover and I can get it.
Yes. Yes, you can. Okay, folks. Right now, a couple announcements from all of your comments. Take a moment to listen to the other recording that's going to go up because there are some things on there that you would like to probably hear, and they're going to listen to yours. We did different exercises. You'll get a chance to hear about your other classmates. There's been a lot going on with people's arms and shoulders. I can think of Joe Philpott and all these other people that have been all in the same boat, so you're not alone when you go through something like this. One thing I want to do is to mention that we're going to be going into the study of cymatics and sound theory. Oh, sound therapy soon. And anybody who lives up around Bethany, Connecticut, or if you're in New England and you want to go to an amazing workshop, our teacher, Jeff Volk, who teaches cymatics, is doing a workshop on Sunday, December 2nd from 1 to 5. And it's going to be in the next newsletter, but the newsletter probably isn't going to come out until just about then. So if anybody's interested in going to that workshop on December 2nd, get in touch with me and I'll send you the information. And you'll be studying with him on your next lesson. So I see that we have more people that have actually joined in to the program, and we didn't get to everybody today, but I did try to get to everybody that raised their hand with questions. We have a couple people from down in Australia on the call, Carmen and Bernadette. Greetings to you. Greetings to everybody. And right now what I'm going to do, we're running over about 19 minutes over the hour, so I'm going to open up the mic and everybody could say goodbye to each other, and we'll see you on the forum. So everybody has the mic right now.
Bye.
Bye,
bye, Joyce.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Australia.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.